Well, get ready for this ride, of course, this coast-to-coast ride. Gary Bobroff back with us and Cynthia Cavalli as we talk about synchronicity with you, your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. By the way, they were overwhelmed at criticalhealthnews.com last night with your phone calls. I mean, overwhelmed. Let me just give it to you one more time in case you tried and couldn't get through. It's 1-855-949-RADIO. There you are. So we're back with Gary Bobroff and Cynthia Cavalli as we talk about synchronicity. And Gary, we were wanting to know about musical synchronicities. So tell us about that.
Oh, boy. Well, that's happening so much, and people talk about it a lot. And I think it's everything from something on the radio to feeling like the, you know, your iPod is expressing something that's going on for you in that moment. You know, I had a funny one the other day. We were having some car trouble, and we started singing that song, Happy. Now that song, Happy.
Oh, yeah.
We changed it to Scratchy, George. We changed it because my car was making a bad noise. So we changed it to Scratchy, and so we made that joke. And the next day, I was singing that song and with my girlfriend in the car, turned on the dial right as I was singing it, and Happy was playing right there, and it was a small one, but it was a fun one. And you know, even a remarkable one, and I'm sure you know this one, George. Michael Shermer, the
skeptic,
of skepticism. Did you read about his one in Scientific American?
No, I didn't. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was quite remarkable that he sent it in. So he was marrying a German woman recently. I think it was last summer or the summer before. And they shipped her furniture over from Germany. And, of course, you know, in shipping, some of it got damaged. And a very old radio that belonged to her grandfather that she really loved got damaged. And Michael, being the scientific guy that he is, tried to fix it and make it work, and he just couldn't do it. And on the day of the wedding, the bride was feeling a little bit, you know, lonely, and they were getting married in the States, and she didn't have her family there, and she went into a back room with him to talk about it, and all of a sudden they heard music coming from somewhere, and they started checking the iPhones and all this, and they couldn't find where it's coming from, and all of a sudden they just had this look of complete awe, and it was the grandfather's radio playing this romantic song out of nowhere. And, you know, they're both of them are there. And it's the thing, I really love these synchronicities where you have two people in the room where it's not just, you can't blow that off and say it's just fantasy. I mean, he's standing there with his bride on their wedding day listening to the grandfather's radio. So stuff like that, you know, really is moving. And it speaks to the feeling factor here. And I think people lose that so much in this world that emphasizes the rational and the certainty and all this stuff. You know, we're missing the feeling piece, and that was so important for them to have that on that day.
Are we making these things happen, Gary, or is it out there in what we call, again, the wireless internet in the universe?
Well, I go back, again, to the ancient Chinese notion of the universe and the Tao as the way of nature, that it's our sincerity. It's the reality of our authentic relationship to the world that we're trying to simply be real. You know, Jung talked about this a lot with therapy, that if someone's not being honest, there's no point to doing therapy. And, you know, music has this special place. You know, when you play an old song for somebody that has Alzheimer's, you know, they come to life and they're moved through. So there's a way that song gets past the ego that's been lost to Alzheimer's and gets to them on a deeper level. And I think those deeper levels beyond the ego, that's what's going on here in synchronicity. Something it speaks to our heart and the deeper part of who we are. And that's really important to understand that.
And Cynthia, when you work with people about synchronicity, how do you get started? How do you work with them? Cynthia, are you with us? No, we'll have to call her back, Ben. So let's disconnect her. Okay, call her back. But you're still with me, Gary.
I'm with you, buddy.
Okay, my friend. I don't know where she went. She disappeared. You talk about synchronicity.
That's okay. I got another good synchronicity for you if you want one.
All right, yeah, go ahead.
So, you know the movie Life of Pi?
Yeah, I do.
And the book? So, do you know why Richard Parker is named Richard Parker?
Why?
Well, there was a book written, it's the only novel ever written by Edgar Allan Poe. It's called The Narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket. And it's usually printed with a sailing vessel on the front cover. And in this story, a cabin boy named Richard Parker goes out to sea, and the ship gets tossed around, and they're off, you know, lost in a lifeboat with three other guys. And they see a turtle, and they eventually catch this turtle, and that keeps them going for a while, but soon they're starving. And Richard Parker suggests, we'll draw straws, and whoever loses will be eaten by the others. And Richard Parker, in the novel, leads this contest, and they all draw lots, and he loses, and they kill him and eat him. And Poe called this book very silly. And 47 years later, the Mignonette set sail from Southampton in England, and a 17-year-old cabin boy named Richard Parker was aboard, and they were tossed around in the sea, and they ended up in a lifeboat with two others, and Richard Parker was killed and eaten by two of the other crew for sure. And the reason we know this is actually true is because it's part of an infamous criminal case in British naval history that actually changed the laws of the sea around cannibalism.
Jeez.
And the ship that rescued the survivors was called the Montezuma.
Oh.
And this is all on British naval record. This is not a myth.
This is real stuff, folks.
Yep.
All right, let's bring Cynthia back in. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, George.
Where'd you go? You disappeared.
I don't know. I was here saying hello.
Oh, could you hear me?
I could hear you, yes.
Huh. Okay, yeah, you should have been there. Okay, but anyways, wanted to know how you work with people with synchronicity.
So a lot of times the people that come to me, I usually talk about transformation and patterns of transformation, and I'm really interested in the different stages of transformation and how there is right action and less right action at different stages. So sometimes depending on what stage of the transformation process you're in, it's the time to act and take bold action. But there are other stages of the transformation process where you wait, and you have to sit with not knowing, and you have to sit with uncertainty, and it's very, very challenging for people. And so when people are going through that phase, I work with their synchronicities and with their dreams to help them interpret the symbolism in the events that happen in the dreams or even in the synchronicity. I was listening to one of the past radio shows where you had a couple on who was also working on synchronicity, and they worked with one of your synchronicities, George, that had to do with Betty Edson. And the woman treated it like a dream, you know, and looked at the elements of the event like a dream, and what association did it have for you, and what is your association, you know, things like that. And that's one of the ways that we can work with synchronicities. We can also look at, draw like a map. So some people don't just have one synchronicity. They might have clusters of synchronicities. They might be small. They might be big. They
sure.
might vary. And then we can kind of map them out and look at the symbolism like a map and see, is it pointing in a certain direction? Is it clustering around certain themes? People will have synchronicities around numbers or words or phrases or even songs, you know, like music. And all of those can provide insight into who they are becoming, which direction they're supposed to go, you know, things like that.
Okay, let's go to the phones now. They're waiting for both of you. Let's go to John in Wright City, Missouri to get started. Hey, John, I used to have a little place near Innsbruck right out there near you.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
Morning, Gary, Cynthia, George. Somewhat of a new listener, first-time caller, really interested in the subject you're talking about this morning. It's kind of lengthy, but I'll try to make it as quick as possible.
Okay.
I'm originally from Blue Ridge, Georgia, small town, North Georgia. My mom had passed away back in July 22nd of 2004, and the last bit of her life was so mysterious that there's no way I can explain it. I don't believe in coincidences as well. So for what had happened, the last year, about 2002 to 2003, my mom was feeling very weird in the sense where she was telling my dad's sister, my aunt, and my wife that she felt like that was going to be the last Christmas she was going to see. And she took out a new insurance policy of $250,000, and she totally changed a lot of things she was doing. And when the new year came, I never knew about this until she passed away, and my aunt and my wife told me. But she actually, when she had passed away, the day she passed away, I was working in construction. I came home, and we had a small little fishing business there in the North Georgia Mountains. And I had, you know, came in from work, told my mom, hey, we got some customers. I'm going to go take care of them. And she says, you know, your sister's at the pool. She's up at the public pool there with a friend. And she's like, your dad's going to be running late today. She's like, I'm going to go get her. I said, no, I said, I'll do that. I said, you know, I haven't really gotten, you know, adjusted to coming home yet. You know, I have nothing to do today. I said, let me go get her. And she insisted multiple times, as well as my grandmother. My grandmother's like, no, I'll go get her. My mom insisted. She left. And when she left, she never returned. She picked up my sister and her little friend at the pool. Like I said, I don't believe in coincidences. And the girl's name that my mom had picked up, her name was Arlene, the same as my mom's name. That day, that girl's mom did not come pick her up, so my mom offered to give her a ride home. They were sitting at a stop sign. A truck driver's right tire blew out and killed her instantly, and it nearly killed my sister.
Oh, my God.
And what had happened was me and my dad got the phone call, but here's the strangest thing, too. I was at home with my dad. My dad had showed up about 20, 30 minutes later after she had left. And he says, where's your mom? And I said, well, she went to go pick up, you know, CJ from the pool, and she'll be back after a while. And she said, go ahead and start supper. You know, they'd be home soon. About 5 minutes before the phone call came through, my dad was in his rocking chair, and he had stopped rocking. And I'd kind of turn around. I'm like, is everything all right? And he had this very puzzled look on his face. He's like, something just happened to your mom and sister. And me being, you know, first time I was like, you know, Dad, nothing's wrong. You know, everything's okay. I said, why would you say that? And he said, no, he said, something's wrong. Then we get a phone call from Fannin Regional Hospital saying they need to speak to the husband and father of Arlene and CJ Underwood. And that happened to be my dad. I felt like my dad had felt his soulmate leave this earth. He knew the exact moment. And everything, it happened so fast that it took me a year to put things together. You know, and even after that, 2 or 3 weeks after that, my mom had always told me, she's like, if there was a heaven and if God did exist, which she did believe in, she's like, and if he allows me to come back, she says, I promise I will come back to let you know I made it to the other side. I was sitting on my bed. This is roughly 2.5 to 3 weeks after the fact that she had passed away. Wasn't delusional. As I go to look up, as I'm sitting on my bed, figuring out my checkbook, it was like 12:30 in the morning. Look up, and there was my mother in my doorway, and it looked like she had just finished looking at me and turned to walk out of the room, and she headed to the room where my sister was in. She had just came out of ICU, and as I ran into the room, and all I could say was, Mom, I smelled the perfume that she wore.
That's right.
Instantly.
Yeah.
And I was so taken back by it that when I went into the bedroom, my sister had this smile on her face as she was laying there asleep, and I thought, she made it. You know, this is, it's just too crazy. I'm telling you, this stuff is, we live in such a fantastical world, and just such amazing things happen.
It's an amazing universe, to be sure, John. Gary, how would you categorize that kind of a story?
Well, I would remind listeners to look at a few of the points there. First of all, look at the connection of feeling, of emotion between those people. You know, we get that, we feel the emotion that he's just glowing when he tells that story. We feel it, and it's the connections between those people, the husband knowing when the wife has left the world, you know, and then seeing the mother. I mean, sometimes in therapy, people will talk about actually having that same sense of smelling someone when they're really doing the work in therapy, too. There's a way that our world is a heart-shaped world, that our connections with people that we love transcend time and space, and even, you know, apparently the afterlife. And that's a beautiful, beautiful vision, and it's a rich vision, and it's many different spiritual traditions have talked about that. And I think it's a much more satisfying worldview, and it's also more accurate as we see from examples like this view of the world. It you know, it's like our culture is dominated by a myth that stuff like that can't happen. And let's break out of that myth and let's embrace stories like that, which are numerous, and revel in this beautiful, mysterious, wonderful world where our heartstrings, you know, carry these wonderful things into fruition and unite us with people that we loved on the, you know, past the other side. You know, that's a beautiful vision, and I think that's the kind of worldview that we need to have to save our planet and to, you know, heal a lot of things that are going on in our culture.
Okay, next up, let's go to Robert in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Robert, go ahead.
George, I think much of the wonder and mystery of synchronicity events could be resolved, might be understood, if we consider the different ways of intercommunicating between people and also between people and the universe surrounding us. And some of the things for example, telepathy has been demonstrated by the extraterrestrials as being a very real thing, and they've even been able to teach human beings how to be better at it. After they've been abducted and come back, they often have that an improved ability to be able to communicate telepathically. And then our awareness of our environment occurs often in out-of-body experiences, where we have either with or without a near-death experience, and people can see things in the room and around them. The third is this remote viewing, which has been studied by our government and the Russians, being able to see things at a distance. And then in the evolving physics thinking that we have now, we have quantum entanglement, what Einstein referred to as action at a distance. And that transcends both our limited notions of space and even maybe of time. And then for those who believe that we have spirits, we've got deceased relatives and friends that may survive and often lead us, provide us guidance. And finally, there's the possibility that there are parallel worlds and universes in which knowledge can be shared without us. So there are all of these many other ways of communicating that we have discovered in the last it's been fairly recent thinking, not in civilization, but in our talking about it, and you certainly have gone into all of these. I wonder what our guests think in terms of these factors interrelating.
Well, I think there's no question that all of these play a role. I mean, the possibilities of the multiverses and other dimensions. Cynthia, will we ever get the answer that whatever is going on is truly a remarkable thing? I'm not sure we ever will.
I agree. I don't know that we will because there's this issue of subjective and objective truth. And so that's where science stops still and doesn't want to venture into subjectivity. And so,
gosh, I just wish we would get those answers. We're going to come back in a moment and take some final phone calls here with Gary Bobroff and Cynthia Cavalli next. All right, this is our final segment now with Gary Bobroff and Cynthia Cavalli as we talk about synchronicity, their book, Crop Circles, Jung and the Reemergence of the Archetypical Feminine, which you can get, Gary, where again?
At Jung, J-U-N-G, and CropCircles.net. And folks can check out the webinar that Cynthia and I are doing in September, too, and on synchronicity and the work of Sheldrake and how we can put it all together with a new segment interview with Rupert that we'll be filming this summer. So we're very excited to take folks, you know, once you get grounded in Rupert, and then you get grounded in Jung, where do you go from there and bring people's stories in and, you know, try and get to the heart of all this?
Well, that's good, too. You're tapping into new technology to get the word out.
Yeah, and the webinars are so easy now for folks. It's really nice.
Cynthia, if you had one thing to have people take away from this interview tonight, what would you like that to be?
I think it would be the idea about meaning, and that meaning is actually a connecting principle in the world, And this was Jung's radical idea when he proposed the idea of synchronicity, was that there is something like meaning out in the world that connects us together and that is deeply powerful and transformative.
All right. Well, we've got a whole group of people wanting to talk with both of you two, so let's do it in the time we have remaining. Oxbridge, Massachusetts, Stacy's turn on the wild card line. Stacy, go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
When you talked about Cynthia, when you talked about the car wreck with the therapist and the client, I got about a story. I have a friend of 10 years now. He's 36. But when he was 15, he was playing tennis with his sister and a friend, and he was picking on his sister, and she got so angry. She goes, "You know what? I hate you, and I hope you get hit by a car when you go home."
Oh, no.
So that day he was driving his bike, and a truck hit his car, and he fell off. And because of that car accident, he lost his sight. And because they had to do some brain surgery on him, and the truck driver never stopped. So no one knows to this day who did it. But that goes, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. How did the sister feel after that happened?
I asked him, I said, "Did you ever tell her?" He says, "No, because he was going through a lot of stuff back then. He had to learn how to do everything because he couldn't see." And later on, I asked him, "Did you talk to her years later about it?" He said, "No, he just let it go."
You mean the sister never knew he got hit?
I don't know. She's only 12, so I don't know.
I'm sure she did. Must have realized something happened. Well, that brings up an interesting take. And, hey, thank you, Stacy, for that. Gary, if this works on good, it also works on evil, doesn't it?
Well, you know, I think that's part of the thing that's hard for folks to understand is that, you know, that synchronicity isn't always a blessing. You know, especially with romance, folks tend to think that, you know, you had this happen and this juicy synchronicity, and that means the whole relationship is blessed by the gods. And it's not always the case. You know, I've had tremendous synchronicities happen, you know, and heard about other people's that turned out to be really bad relationships. And so, you know, it's hard to sort it through. I mean, in a Jungian way, we would say something like synchronicities point to the presence of the gods, the presence of the mystery. It doesn't mean that the relationship isn't going to be one that, you know, gives you a kick in the butt and that you learn some things from it. So it's sometimes tough for folks to sort that out.
Sure is. And Cynthia, how about you? What would you say about this?
Well, so one of the ideas with dreams and synchronicity, the things that happen to us in our lives, Jung's idea was that the ultimate goal was wholeness, not necessarily happiness or, you know, achievement, but wholeness. And so the things that happen may not necessarily make us happy. They may not necessarily be things that we deem good or positive, but they will ultimately lead to wholeness. And through that, you know, you can find happiness and being more healthy and whole in your psyche and in your being. So, you know, that story that the last caller told,
sad story. Jeez.
I can't imagine that it wouldn't that the sister couldn't have felt bad about it, but ultimately they could work through it and come to some deeper understanding of their relationship with each other and with themselves. It has that potential.
All right, next up we go to Steve in Echo Park, California. Good morning, Stephen. Go ahead.
Good morning. So I'm the postmodern eco-psycho, not living in Echo Park. These synchronicities I'm going to lay on you are, like, so crazy, like, you almost might want me as a guest, right? So I'm just going to run through them, right?
With a phone that doesn't beep. Go ahead.
Is my phone beeping?
Yeah, it's beeping like crazy, but that's okay.
Oh, it's probably dying.
Battery's
going. Sorry. Anyway, my dad had a younger brother when they were young. They were on a boat, and the younger brother died, and I have his same birthday, okay?
Oh.
All right, so one day I'm reading a book by John Robison written in 1796. It's called Proof of a Conspiracy, and he found a chest in Scotland of all the initial communication of the founders of the Illuminati, right? So like a third through this book, he lists the first 30 members of the Illuminati. Oh, and I'm into Hermeticism, okay? That's what I'm way into, right? So on this list, it has the person's name, their alias, and their job. So I'm reading down the list, and all of a sudden, my last name's Socher, and there's a guy with my last name on that list, and his alias is Hermes Trismegistus, which is just crazy, right? So now I'm reading Alice Crowley's book 4, Magic Without Tears. If you open to the title page, it says 444 right there. So I got that symbol on the hardcover book tattooed on my rib cage, and I finally figured out what it means. It corresponds to know, to dare, to will, and to keep silent, which is the 4 magical precepts.
Okay, well, I don't know where the synchronicity is there, but your phone's ready to die. Did you pick up anything from that, Gary?
A
no would suffice.
Seems like a neat guy.
Indeed. Let's go next to Jeff in Culver City, California. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George, Gary, and Miss Cynthia Cavalli. Yes, I'm wondering if synchronicity can work in the subconscious sleep state where one or more minds can somehow tap into a sleeper's dreams, seeing, hearing, and even participating in that dream. And is it possible for one or more minds thousands of miles away, you know, in the far-off distance, to become in sync with the person who's dreaming, experiencing, and, you know, the exact same dream at the exact same time, altering or interfering with that dream? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Who wants that? You, Gary, or you, Cynthia? Dreams.
I'll take it.
You got it.
So I've also done a lot of shamanic dream work, and we do that regularly in our shamanic dream experiences together. You can dream together, and it's separate from synchronicity. Synchronicity, you know, is more the way I described it. And although you can have dream synchronicities, the kind of experiences that the caller was describing are really, you can do group dreaming, you can re-enter dreams, you can go back in time, you can go forward in time, you can enter each other's dreams, you can go together and someone had a dream and doesn't know what it means. Then you can go with friends back into that person's dream. It's called dream reentry. And there's, in fact, my husband and I, sometimes if I'm very overworked and tired and busy, and my psyche is tired, he'll have a dream and it's clearly meant for me, and then he'll share it with me, or vice versa. I've had dreams that really belong to him, and then I can share it and say, you know, this dream doesn't make sense for me. And he'll go, oh, that relates to something going on for me. So definitely stuff going on, and there, I've done a lot of work around that, and there are groups that do that kind of work too.
Gary, what about dreams where people dream? You had mentioned relationships earlier, but that people dream of each other. They don't know each other. Then they meet, and they say, I had a dream about you.
Mm-hmm. Cynthia, you want that one? I think you have a story for that. Yeah?
Okay.
Well, I did have a dream like that when, before I met my husband, before I met his daughter, I dreamt that I was in a house with a special TV that could show you your future. And I didn't want to look in the television because I wanted my future to flow and I wanted to be surprised. I didn't want to game it, you know. And the woman sitting next to me said, you should look at this TV because there's your daughter is in there. And I was single at the time, and mm-hmm. I thought, well, that's ridiculous. How could I have a daughter? So I looked in the TV, and there was this young woman, about 14 years of age, with long, dark hair. And I said, that's crazy. That can't be my daughter. I would know I had a 14-year-old daughter. How could you have a 14-year-old not know you had a daughter, you know? And that was a dream, and I described the young woman in the dream, and then I forgot about it. And then a couple years later, I found the journal again, and I was reading the dream, and that was my husband's daughter. I mean, I had described
it. See?
It was really remarkable, and I even read it to her, and she said, that's me. It was really something.
I like that one. Let's go to Simi in Southern Pines, North Carolina, wild card line. Good morning, Simi.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Cynthia and Gary. I have a quick question for Gary, and if there's enough time, I'd like to say something about synchronicity. On the crop circles, Gary, has anybody actually put them through a 3D printer or stretched them out, you know, through computer, CGI or something to see if they represent something more than like what we, you know, multidimensional, since it's like the multiversal energy that's creating this? Do you know if anybody has done that?
Yes, definitely, yes. There are different people that have done that. One of the gentlemen that did it has someone who passed away in 2009, a gentleman named Paul Vigay, a crop circle researcher in the UK. He looked at doing that. And there was also a book by a guy named Doug Ruby named The Gift, where he looked at technological implications of crop circles. And so that has been done and looked at, and some people continue to be fascinated by the whole notion of turning those beautiful two-dimensional images into three dimensions. So yeah, that's people are checking that out.
Let's take a few more calls here, and the clock is going to get us pretty soon. We've got Mary Jo in Virginia Beach, Virginia. First time caller for Mary Jo. Hi, Mary Jo. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, George. I'd like to share an experience that occurred after my father passed away here in Virginia Beach. It was in the year 2000, and I should preface it by saying that my father served 34 years in the Marine Corps. He was an aviator, and the last part of his career, he flew helicopters. And the day after his funeral service, my older brother was sharing an experience with my mother and sister and I that he had had. He had actually been down at the oceanfront at Virginia Beach in the early morning and walking along the shoreline, and it had been a little cloudy, but the clouds parted and over his head flew a parade of helicopters, and every model of helicopter that my father flew in the Marine Corps was represented in that parade of helicopters.
Everyone.
I mean, wow. It was, you know, obviously, I guess to put it in Young's words, a numinous experience for my brother, and I mean even for our family after he shared it. But what made it even more meaningful was we later found out my uncle, my mother's brother, was retired from Bell Helicopter, and he actually got the job as a result of knowing my father. He used my father as a reference. His boss there was a retired Marine who had known my father in the Marine Corps, and he happened to be showing us, we had gone to visit him in Amarillo, Texas, and he happened to be showing us a calendar that he received every year as a retiree from Bell Helicopter, and I was thumbing through it, and I noticed that in the first week of May 2000, the American Helicopter Society had held their annual meeting there in Virginia Beach, and that was, you know, just the time that
lots
my father
of synchronicity
had passed away.
Jeez.
And what makes it even more meaningful is that my father was sent to Korea with only 40 hours of training in helicopters to fly medevacs.
Wow.
And after he returned and was stationed in Quantico, Virginia, he was invited to speak to the American Helicopter Society. This was back in the 1950s, and we actually have a photograph of him making his presentation at their annual meeting, and he had received a letter of thanks from them as well. So
this thing was synchronicity all the way, guys.
Mm-hmm.
All the way. That's a great story.
Yeah, that's a beautiful story. Yeah. It reminds me of there's a great movie coming out that Rupert and myself and others are in it. Time is Art, Synchronicity and the Collective Dream, thesyncmovie.com. Check it out. And that's such a wonderful, you know, validation of you know, your dad's experience. And you know, it doesn't need anything to be added to it. It's just, like you said, it's numinous, and it honors that experience, and it's beautiful.
It is amazing how it all works. Now, is there a difference between synchronicity and luck?
Well, I think there's a connection to beginner's luck, and that's something that Sheldrake wrote about and Jung wrote about.
Uh-huh.
And it's that novelty, you know, why is there beginner's luck, for example? Well, the person who's new to an event has more emotional energy involved, and there's also a kind of a naivete and a sincerity when you're new. You're not, you know, you're not all sophisticated around things, and that generates different results. And both Jung and Sheldrake were interested in that, and I think it's a really interesting question.
For sure. Gary, thank you for being on the program. Cynthia, you too as well.
My pleasure.
And again, their websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Make sure you're part of our program tomorrow. We're going to be talking about consciousness and demons in two separate interviews. And, of course, we'll be taking your phone calls because we're interactive here on Coast to Coast AM. And thanks again to all of you for continuing to support us. 615 stations now in North America. That includes Canada, my friends. Thank you so much. And I'll be in Canada, in Toronto, on August 22nd. Just go to georgenorilive.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Ben Haley, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.